And a big aloha and welcome to the Travel Angel Radio Show. I'm Cindy Paulos here with you. And we're just going to do a little travel news about that. Yosemite is like one of my favorite places. I haven't been there in a while because I don't like to deal with lots of crowds. So you'd have to probably go off season. But my gosh, with that fire, they said Yosemite had them enclosed for 30 years. I'm here with Kathy Takushi. Captivating Journeys, good to see you.
Hi, Cindy.
Wouldn't you hate it if you were had these plans to go to Yosemite? And I don't know where else you'd go. Isn't the Sequoia National Forest might be an option, but it's been 30 years since they've closed that. So, I mean, that's a huge impact of all those people who are going to go to Yosemite.
Yeah, especially plan, for the summer travel.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Plan B. Yeah. Have you been to Sequoia National? Sequoia is beautiful. Oh.
The trees.
But I don't think they have the setup to handle a lot of people near there either, how they'd get all those people over. Because if you're there, you're stuck. You had to figure out where else to go. And that's when it would be good to have a travel agent do it for you. Just like, hey, I can't get into Yosemite. Kathy, help me book something else quickly, please. Because people plan usually for about maybe a week, 5, 6, 7 days of Yosemite, right? And you'd have to book something real quickly.
Yeah.
If you were going to do that one. And Greece, my gosh. 80 people died, and that's pretty close to Athens where that fire happened.
Yeah.
People ran into the ocean trying to avoid it, and some people hit cliffs in some areas and couldn't get off the cliffs and died right at the cliffs. This is the weather impact. I mean, you know, whether you believe weather or not, believe me, this is all related to the change in weather patterns, and it's kind of like, wow. And the other news and travel is they say prices are going to go up in 2019 because of the cost of fuel.
Yeah, they've been saying that. I mean, our fuel here has been going up.
It sure has. Yeah. I saw $4.15 the other day.
It was $4.19.
Did you see $4.19?
Yeah, just this morning, I think.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. That's too much. You know, one of my pet peeves is when they give the price of gas around the country on the news. And they say the highest cost is in San Francisco for $3.35.
They forget about us.
They totally forget that we're here. It's like, no, yeah. We're here and it costs more here. Yeah. I go to Costco for just because of that. And last time I was there, it was $3.25. But still, that's 50 cents more than it was 6, 7 months ago, right? Mm-hmm. So what's happening with you in travel news?
Oh, it's a busy time right now. Usually around this time of year, the airlines start changing their schedules. So for the fall, and they take off flights that way. So now I'm working, rebooking clients because they don't have the flight anymore.
Wow.
So, yeah. I know United, I think, I'm not sure what date it starts, but they're going down to like one flight a day, Maui, LA, on certain days.
That's crazy.
I think there's too much competition now. You know, they got.
What, are they going to fold up? I mean, that's when you're supposed to buckle down and get better deals and increase, right? I can't believe that.
Yeah, I know. At certain days, they only have one afternoon flight where they usually, like right now, they've got like three.
When does that kind of happen? That impacts me a lot.
In September, I believe. I'm not
sure. Oh, that's terrible news.
Yeah, so if you've booked your flight far out, make sure you you check your itineraries.
Okay, so here I am. Okay, say I booked a flight in December. What would I do?
Well, reconfirm your flights. Mm-hmm. And between now and December, I bet there's going to probably be a couple more changes. So just keep an eye on your itinerary.
Because they used to always have always had the flight that goes at around 9 or 9:30 or 10 o'clock, depending on whether it's at LA night. Or mm-hmm. San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So are they going to drop that one?
They have on certain days, not every day. So probably, I didn't pay attention to this, how they scheduled it. But I know when I was looking for clients the other day, it was only one flight on United to LA.
That's shocking
to me. In September. But then if you went probably the weekends, like a Friday, uh-huh. they probably have the two flights.
But that also was when they charge more typically. Usually they charge more on the weekends.
Usually.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, Alaska, here I come. I mean, I've been thinking about switching over to Alaska or another airlines, but I mean, or maybe American, but that's just, no, that's not good news. It's like, that might be the that might be the final deal. I've been playing the United game for a long, long time. I think 700,000 miles worth, but they're going to do that. I mean, because I travel more later, you know, September and later, not in the summer so much.
But it's not as busy, you know, so they're probably, that's why they're taking it off. But one flight a day is very unusual.
Very unusual. Doug Schenk is here. It's always good to see you, Doug. You just got back on Sunday, right?
Hi, Cindy.
Are you still recovering?
I think I'm recovered.
Are you recovered? Yeah, that didn't take too long. Yeah,
no, it doesn't.
Do you fly? What airline do you fly, Doug?
I'm a United person as well.
Isn't that kind of shocking news?
Yeah, but the good news is it always changes.
Well, that's true. Everything changes eventually.
Right,
but
so,
will it change for September? If you're, you know,
I'm pretty loyal United because I'm trying to get a million miles.
Right.
So
right. Yeah. John got a million, and he's solid gold now.
Yeah, but it helps with the seat selection.
Yeah, a little bit. But you know what? It doesn't help with the upgrades. I thought it would.
I just got upgraded twice. I'm on my way back from Quebec.
Oh, really?
On Sunday. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Try it. Well, maybe it just depends where you're going.
Yeah,
I think it does.
It's random.
Yeah, it is. But you're not 1K.
No.
You might be soon. See, now 1K, you get in. That's why Christine Wong and Betty Sakamoto, they swear by the 1K thing. Because once you're 1K, you do get the upgrades. But still, there's times she doesn't. We were flying United to somewhere together. And
New York, I think.
It was New York, and we didn't get the upgrades, even though she was 1K.
Well, if they have paying customers.
If they have paying customers.
They get the seats.
Exactly.
As it should be.
And they make sure these days that their planes are full enough where there aren't the openings to get as much a chance to get a paying customer. So what Christine does, she tries to book the flights that don't get booked as much to get a better chance to get the upgrades, right? It's like, wow.
It's a game.
It's a
strategy.
It is a
game. It is absolutely a game.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely a game. Well, I really would like you to keep us posted on that. Really, truly. That's... I'm concerned about that for me personally, because I mean I'll go ahead and get that Alaska deal. They were giving you the credit card, and if you did so many miles, you're going to get like a 50,000 mile bonus and stuff like that. So I may just switch over and do that, and check that out. But anyway, I'm glad you came in, Doug. And also with us is our friend Dr. Tom Vendetti. Great to see you again, Tom.
Aloha.
A lot's happened, even just in the last time you were here very recently. We're here today. We're going to talk a little bit about this wonderful benefit that's coming up at the McCoy Theater on August 4th at the Maui Dharma Center. And our wonderful, lovely Lama Gyaltsen will be there. And you were on the trip, and Tom was on the trip. Tom kind of arranged the trip. It's going to be some photos and interesting information on that trip to Mount Kailash. Plus, you're showing the film Kailash.
Yes, it was a film that was made in 2001 called Mount Kailash Return to Tibet. And that's when I went with Paul Horn, the legendary flute player. And it's still very relevant, though, in terms of what we experienced. Although Tibet has changed, the trek has not. It's very difficult, high, and we'll talk a little bit about that later.
Absolutely. So now I'm, again, going back before we finish up with Kathy here, this is something where really it might be good to have a travel agent, Captivating Journeys 244-1414, because, I'd kind of be at a loss, and I guess the next question I would ask you, if I was planning a trip through you, is like, well, what would you suggest if I can't do the time that I wanted on the day I wanted, and didn't want to pay more for the weekend? What would be the next thing I would look at?
You have to be flexible.
You do have to be flexible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe go with another airlines. And
yeah.
Because on a lot of these things, like some of the cruises now, will include air. You might pay a little more from Hawaii, but... Mm-hmm. If you have less of a choice for time and you're considering going and joining a cruise, sometimes they just will charge you extra if it's not the day before. So then you're going to have to maybe go 2 days before if you can't get in on the time you expected to get in.
Right. Yeah, I was dealing with a schedule change with an air that was booked via Oceana Cruises, and one of the flights coming home was no longer. So then, anyways, it was...
Yeah.
We had to work it till we got what we wanted. So.
And they had already booked it, planning on that flight they had mm-hmm. booked, and the flight was canceled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the flight was no longer LA Honolulu on Delta. That was Delta. So then,
wow.
Yeah. So.
So yeah, these things can get complicated, and also, I mean, there's all these obviously weather things going on, like Yosemite and now Greece, and then there was the Branson thing, and that was definitely weather related.
And storm in Japan now.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh my. Yeah. So yeah, things are changing out there, and travel's never been more popular. Maybe not coming to America. They're saying actually some people are avoiding that. But for the rest of the world, I mean, people are traveling. And and when you have changes like this going on, you have to, as you say, be flexible. I have to mention that my audiobook, How to Fly with Less Stress, is out. And it's actually doing well. I was at number 144 in travel books.
Wow, congratulations.
Which was the highest it's ever been. And they had it down on price as well. So I think it was $14.65. But it's really handy because you can listen to that if you're traveling and you need to relax and breathe and meditate and do things like that. It's all there. And you can use that when you're stressing out because your flight's canceled and you can't get home. Breathing helps.
Yeah. Don't stress. I mean, what can you do? You're on vacation,
exactly.
You know, so it could be worse.
Well, it's sometimes I've noticed when people are all in that line and there's something like that happens and there's this like stress that's almost contagious, like herd thinking, when people are starting to get mad, you know. And that's when you really have to be solid in your thinking, because mm-hmm. it can really spread and people are hearing other people yelling and people are trying to push to the front of a line. It's like, mm-hmm. it gets crazy.
It's better. I mean, speaking of that, if you are in that situation and you see the long line, call reservations mm-hmm. or our clients call us and then we deal with it.
Yeah.
But you'll get probably faster service by calling the reservation versus standing in line.
And if you are a higher level on some of these cards and things, you can get through on a separate telephone line, which
exactly
does help. They're nicer to you. No,
they are.
They're nicer to you.
Unfortunately, that's true.
Yes.
It's true. And it's like, oh, okay, you'll actually talk to me, and I get a person talking to me that I can understand. Last I saw you, Doug, the last time I saw you was in Paul Gauguin. Oh, no, actually, I did taxes, and I saw you then. Cindy did my taxes.
Yeah.
But last I saw you otherwise was on the Paul Gauguin cruise, and that was when Tom was on that, too, and Keola Beamer. I think that was in late October?
Yeah. Of 17 or 16.
Oh, okay.
Last year?
Yeah, last year. And you loved that one. You had a good time.
Oh. We'll do that again, I think, sometime.
And that was your first time?
No, that was the second time.
Oh, the second time you
did
it.
Kathy and I were together.
Yeah, Kathy and I met each other. Yes.
Oh. I forgot what year that was.
You
like
were on
four.
The same cruise?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With the Giels.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sue and Art. Not
Dart.
Art. Dart.
Yeah.
No.
It's Dart.
Dart.
Yeah.
Like Art. Dart.
Dart. Yeah. Sue and Dart Gill were on that trip. That's right.
Yeah.
Amazing. So well, that must have been fun.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So then we were all kind of jealous because we were heading home and it was too soon to really go home. And you were taking off on this amazing adventure. No, really. I mean, we were all jealous, weren't we, Tom? I think we were. Even with our Dharma background, we were a little jealous, right?
Well, yeah. In fact, I offered to carry his suitcase.
Yeah. I mean, I love talking to people like you, Doug. This is like my dream of being able to do what you and your wife, Cindy, do. So you went off then to India? Is that where you went next, or Venice?
No, we went to Europe.
You went to Europe next?
Uh-huh. So we we went to Venice and Rome, and we went on a cruise, and it went up the Amalfi Coast.
This is the Holland America?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How long was that cruise?
Oh, probably about 20 days.
Oh, my gosh. That was a long cruise.
Yeah.
Wow. And I love the Amalfi Coast, Positano, Amalfi, all through there and everything.
Yeah.
So did you dock in Naples and then do the different cruises,
we
excursions
did.
From there?
We did. And then we also traveled independently as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so we took the train and went to Sorrento.
I love Sorrento.
Yes.
Limoncello.
Oh, man.
Limoncello, and lots of lemon trees everywhere. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And Positano is a gorgeous. Did you go to Positano down there?
No, we didn't
it's
get
It's just
that
above
far.
Amalfi. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amalfi's gorgeous, too.
Oh, it is. It's spectacular.
Yeah. Did you go up to that little town above it?
We did. I'm not going to remember the name of it.
Yeah. It's a very small little town where it's very musical and beautiful.
Oh, spectacular.
Ravello,
yes.
Ravello. I loved Ravello. There's these villas along the cliffs up there that are just magical.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. It doesn't even seem like it's real.
I know, and there's this little town square. Oh, my gosh. Oh. And the town square, they love their music. They have a huge music festival. I stayed in a villa. Branson has a villa place up there. I used to. I don't know if he sold it. But, I mean, these gorgeous villas you can stay in up there in the hills. And you can't get there by driving in from Naples. You literally have to, at some point, even if your driver's there, you got to walk through some side roads to get there.
Right.
Because they're tiny little
the
roads.
The roads are so tiny. Yeah. If a person wants to stop at the store, I found out, they just stop right in the middle of the street.
They just
leave
they
their
stop
car
at the store.
And go and block traffic in both directions.
Well, they don't care.
No, and they don't care.
That's their town, and they have the right to do it.
Yeah.
You know, that's so funny. So that was 20 days, my gosh. So then you were already in late November.
Right.
So, and Venice was part of that cruise, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, Venice is really...
That's a good time of year to go to Venice,
it
isn't
is.
It? Because it's gotten ruined in the summertime. It's just too crowded. It really is.
Yeah.
Did you have good weather?
We had great weather.
Yeah, because I was there in November, and everyone said, oh, you don't want to go in November because it rains and it floods, and it was gorgeous.
No,
it was perfect.
No, it was great.
Yeah, that's good. So that's a good time to go in. The thing is, you're doing this long cruise, so you can't really shop, can you? Because there's no room unless you ship it back. You can't
carry any. You know, I think we're done with the shopping part of traveling.
Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, we bring it home, and... there's no place to put it anymore.
I know.
And we used to buy art, and a lot of it's in the closet.
Really?
Because I don't have any room to hang it any longer. So.
Wow.
So, yeah, and Cindy doesn't really like to shop that much.
Uh-huh.
She likes to go to museums and cultural events hiking and, you know, pictures and, you know, so.
How many pictures did you take on that portion
of
the
trip? Know, I looked at my file the other day. There's like 17,000
oh my gosh.
Photos.
17. And this is your phone. It's a good thing. You got the 125 gig.
They're in the cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the cloud, there's all these pictures of Doug, and it's about to rain pictures of Doug down because it's so heavy with pictures.
I've taken pictures. I've been on trips. I haven't even looked at the pictures yet.
I know. usually in your cruise, there's a little time to review them at the nighttime or when you're going to the bathroom. You can look at them sometime, usually, to review. Or on the plane flight back, you know, you can look back at the pictures and you'll probably delete a bunch of them one day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was, then you went to India from?
Well, let's see, in January of this year.
Oh, you came home then after that.
Yeah,
cruise.
So we spent Christmas here. And then in January, I went to the Bangkok Film Festival, which I like to do. And it's normally in November, but it was in January because the king passed away, and that was like the mourning period, so they moved it to January. And then as soon as Cindy, my wife, was finished with taxes on the 16th of April,
I might have been her last appointment. Okay, yes.
we took off for Bangkok again. We like to go to this place called Hua Hin. It's a couple hours south of Bangkok, and stay at the Sentara Hotel.
Now that's on the ocean.
It's on the Gulf of Siam. Yeah, it's opposite of the Andaman Sea, right? It's on the inside, and we stay at this place. That's the old railway hotel. It's all made out of wood and colonial architecture, and it's, you know, maybe 150 years old.
Wow, how fantastic.
It's right on the beach, yeah.
Oh, my. So it's one of those ones, a lot of those old colonial hotels have these massive lobbies, and fireplaces and things. I don't
it, is, it is. It is kind of like
those
that.
Big old.
Yeah, it's got the teak floors, mm-hmm. and it's only two stories.
Oh.
And it's got beautiful grounds. It has topiaries all over the place of
wow.
elephants and
really?
Turtles. Yeah, they're just giant topiaries. You know, like.
And what's the, is it like the huge ballroom restaurant where they
oh,
serve?
Oh, no.
No?
No, there's nothing huge in the buildings themselves. They're all, it's all quite small.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, there's no ballroom actually in that hotel.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's just little restaurants.
Because a lot of the old hotels in those
yeah,
days
one
wanted
have,
ballrooms
yeah.
and things. Yeah, because the travelers in those days did balls and things like that. But, you know, this,
yeah.
this was a boutique hotel.
Yes.
Of sorts.
I guess so, yeah.
And did they do all Thai, was it Thai food or what was it kind of food?
We actually don't eat at the hotel.
Yeah, it was
we,
smart.
We eat in the, we walk into town and we there's like four restaurants that we think are superb. And one's down the beach at a place called the Siloam Hotel. It's a little family-owned hotel. It's right on the beach.
Uh-huh.
We eat there. And then there's a couple of restaurants in the Hua Hin town itself that we mm-hmm. go to.
How long were you there?
We were only there for 3 or 4 days,
uh-huh.
3 nights, and then we went back to Bangkok and took off for India for a month before we met up with Tom and Kathmandu to go
so
to.
So you didn't come home in between?
No.
Oh.
No.
So right from, you got to tell me how you pack for trips that are this long. That's a long
oh,
trip.
Oh, I take a carry-on. Fits
no.
in the overhead, yeah.
No.
Yeah. I was trying to find that picture I had. I thought it was in my phone, but yeah. with you and Sue and Dart you,
yeah.
after the Paul Gauguin.
Oh, yeah.
And their suitcase is so small, and they were gone, well, I don't know, 3-6 months.
Yeah, well, yeah. We, yeah. I mean, it all can go in a carry-on above your head in the overhead.
How do you do that?
Well, I mostly take dry-fit clothes. You know, pants and shorts and shirts, and then wash them out frequently. Shoes are and foot cover are the biggest problem if you're going hiking or whatever.
Yeah.
So I usually wear my hiking boots on the airplane because
uh-huh.
that takes up half the room in a suitcase.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then a pair of slippers, a hat that folds up really small, my iPhone and my Nano.
And you did some shopping in Kathmandu.
Oh,
the
yeah.
trek too.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's very cold.
Yeah, know. So that's right. Thanks, Tom. So I was able to get several things I needed. Plus, I have a friend over there that loaned me some sleeping bags, Cindy and I, some sleeping bags. So we didn't have to pack those. But I also have a Eddie Bauer jacket and vest that I wore up to Mount Kailash that folds up into something no bigger than something that'll fit in your suitcase the size of a pair of pants.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's that down material.
What suitcase do you have that you can do this with?
I picked it up at Macy's. It's, you know, it's that hardcover small one that fits in the overhead. It's got four rollers on the bottom. And, it's just got two compartments.
You know, you could do a class on this. You could actually give a class on how to do this. I would go. Wouldn't you go, Kathy?
Yeah, I think probably Cindy should because it's easier for men to pack than women because, you know, you got all your stuff. So
right, but Cindy's there.
Yeah, so she can do it.
Yeah,
she should teach
She's
class.
There. She's She has the same identical bag I have. It's just a different color.
Wow. That is mind-boggling. Well, I can see where that could come in handy.
Yeah.
But then there's some planes that, you know, it can get even a little hard on some times traveling.
Well,
they say that they won't even let some bags on the overhead bin that you think would be. Here in America, fine. But in Europe, sometimes they say, I've had them say what is definitely supposed to be an overhead bag. Things I was told by Lufthansa once that I had to check it.
Right.
It was a Sierra backpack, a rolling thing that was supposed to fit. And they said, no, that's too big. I said, no, I've been backing this. Everyone, no, it's too big.
Yeah, we just ran into that in Newfoundland.
Uh-huh.
When we were going from Boston into Newfoundland, we had to check our bag because the planes are really small. They had no overhead,
mm-hmm.
which is okay. You just check them through. They're good about it. They're right there when you arrive.
Yeah, yeah. So this is impressive, too. So you went to India. Now, I have not been to India. As you know, Tom, I've been to Nepal, and I was in Tibet, but I have never been to India. And you did a rather extensive trip in India. Where did you go in India?
Well, we landed in Delhi, and we worked our way down to the very bottom of the country on the western side. On the western side.
When you say you worked your way down, is it trains, planes?
Or it was cars and planes. So, for example, we flew to Agra, and then we to see the Taj Mahal, and then we picked up a car there, and then we drove through Rajasthan, which was fascinating, looking at all those castles, and then we flew to Kerala, which is in the very south of the country, and picked up another car, and went down to the very tip of the country where three seas meet, the Andaman Sea and the Arabian Sea and the Indian Ocean.
Okay, now you're going awfully fast, so I want to go back. I want to go back to the Taj Mahal. Oh. I mean, because I've never been there, and of course, you know, it's supposed to be one of the ones that, and I look at the pictures and it looks amazing. Was it what you expected to be? Were you impressed or unimpressed?
Well, we had a driver and a guide, right? So when the driver dropped us off, the guide walked us in, and he told us where to stand, and was super early in the morning, basically before anybody got there. And he put his arms out wide in front of him, and he said, "You are now looking at the most beautiful building in the world." So I contemplated that, and I'm looking at that building, and it was the most beautiful building I've ever seen. Mm. It was made out of whitish pink marble, just the most exquisite workmanship. And it was built by a Muslim king for his deceased wife to put her body in. And his love for her was just like displayed in that building. So yes.
So it was.
Oh, absolutely. And then we walked through it before there were a lot of people in it.
And did you have to pay extra to do that? Or was it like a special private thing that got you an extra?
You know, I don't even know. Maybe. I can't remember. Probably. Money does help with that kind of thing. But yeah. I probably had to pay a little bit more. But I don't really remember.
Have you ever been to the Taj Mahal, Tom?
Yes, I've been there twice. And it was the same experience for me. It's just so beautiful. In fact, speaking of Paul Horn again, he played, you know, inside
That's
the
right.
Taj Mahal.
That's one of his favorite, the most popular CDs.
And the first time I
was
there.
Wait, that wasn't a CD. They didn't have CDs.
Yeah, it was
albums. Yes.
So that was in 1983. So and back then there were not big crowds.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in and I was thinking of Paul, and I just clapped my hand and it echoed for about 6 seconds.
Wow.
That is amazing, huh?
Yeah.
I love that album. I had that album.
Right.
Yeah, I used to, and the one in Egypt too that he had
inside
the pyramid.
Great pyramids.
Yeah,
right.
Those were two of the great ones, of course. So, got to do it, I guess. Issue. I always worried, and I've heard many stories of people who've gone there that are friends that have gotten very sick from the food in India. Did you have any problems?
No problems with sickness or the food whatsoever.
Wow. Okay.
The only issue I have with India are the. Is the traffic and how dangerous the roads are. And I mean, I think we've came within a fraction of losing our lives, I don't know how many times.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Scary.
So scary, yeah. Uh-huh. And then later I looked up and I learned that over 110,000 people per year die on the roads in India.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Did you have travel insurance?
I think we did. Yeah, we bought it on that trip. We did.
That's smart.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple, because I'm still fascinated with India, and I've seen some of these ones where people do it on train trips and cross around India, and some of those are just terrifying. I mean, I've seen what people have to deal with getting on trains in India and going, I do not want to go train travel in India after seeing that. I guess driving is the best solution to that, but then you deal with this danger in driving, you know. So.
The best thing you can do is get a late model SUV type vehicle with all the safety features and a professional driver.
Yeah.
So that's what we
do.
That
you did,
yeah.
Okay. So then from Taj Mahal, you drove south.
Yes, we drove through Rajasthan.
Was that south or is it across?
South. Kind of it's south. Yes, it's southeast.
No,
excuse me. It's southwest.
And that's not the one that's the red city. That's Jaipur. That's the red city.
Well, we went to Jaipur as well.
You did Jaipur. Yeah. That looks beautiful, too. Is that beautiful?
Amazing. They have the red fort there.
Yeah.
Which is just spectacular. These forts built by the Rajas.
Uh-huh.
And these castles, I guess they're called. Uh-huh. You can stay. We stayed in one.
Did you? Yeah. What was it like?
Oh, it's just unbelievable. So there was hardly anybody there, so they gave us the best room in the whole place.
What was that like? Tell me about.
Walk in there and you think you're like in a royal room. I mean, they have curtains flowing down from the ceilings, and the bedposts, you know, are all made out of carved wood, and they've got a beautiful marble floor with the seating areas.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just. And the pool is right outside the door.
Oh my god!
And then it has like a moat security wall around the whole property that you can walk up onto and view the sunset in the evenings.
Oh, I want to go. Do you remember the name of that place?
I could probably get it to you.
Oh, yeah. It sounds amazing. How did you just want? I would just want to stay there. I would have just wanted to say, I'm staying here for a while. Were you just there a night or two?
Yeah, we were just there a night.
Oh, my God.
We were just passing through.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And then you went down.
And then we went down to Jaipur, and which, you know, every town you go into, we had a driver and a guide we would meet, and of course they take you to the best places to see in the city or wherever you go. So we went to the best museums, the most interesting museums, and the castles.
Any problem with language?
No, they speak. They speak perfect English. I don't speak any of the local languages. So.
What was the best way to find your driver? You seem like you got pretty good luck on that. How did you find your drivers?
Well, we know we have a friend in lives in Kathmandu, and he arranged this whole trip for us.
Yeah. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, he's arranged a number of trips. He owns a travel agency, and he's the guy that loaned us his sleeping bags.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, he's made trips for us in... in Tibet before, and
Sikkim.
Yeah, he made a great trip for us in Sikkim, which is northeastern India.
So northeastern, would that be near Pakistan?
No.
No, the other side.
That's the other side. Okay. Yeah,
it's over close to Bhutan.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Next to Bhutan.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. I've been curious about the lakes up in northern India, but. What's that called?
Oh, Kashmir.
But then there's all this unrest there with the Muslims and fighting the other. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been wanting to go there.
But I've been hearing some stories that it could be dangerous there.
I'll let you know. We'll probably go there.
You're going to go? So then you wander on down from there, and you've been on the road now for about a week and a half, 2 weeks already?
Probably.
Yeah. And then you wandered down further south.
Yes.
Now, what was the weather like?
Hot.
Yeah.
It was as hot as Cambodia can be in the hot season. It was like 43, which is like 114 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, that's a
is bloody hot.
That's an issue.
It is. And we normally wouldn't travel to a hot place like that at that time of year, but because we wanted to hook up with Tibetan Irish trip, So, you know, it's also a mental thing as well, right? So
114, still 114. I mean, I know what you're saying. That's what my book's about. It's trying to get in that state, but it's still hot.
So think, you know, air-conditioned car.
Yes.
You know, cold towels.
Yes.
You know, with coolers with ice in it, lots of water.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's ways you can mitigate all that.
So what was the next exciting place?
Well, a place called Kerala, India. And they used to grow pineapple down there, so I found that interesting. And rice.
Huh.
And
so kind of tropical.
Very tropical. And it actually looks like Hawaii a lot.
Wow.
And so we stayed on a river boat for several nights on a rice boat that used to
I've never heard of a rice boat.
Yeah, they have all these tributaries and they're kind of like rivers that go right into the plains where they would grow rice in the past. But they don't grow much rice anymore down there. So, and the rice they do grow, they haul it out on trucks now. But they used to haul it out on these barges Well, they're made out of like, they're made out of all natural material like palm leaves and
really?
And they're quite large. But now you can like, rent them and spend the night on them, and they come with a captain, and a cook and a crew.
How cool!
in a bedroom.
Wow! And do you have it to yourself?
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. So you did that for a day, and you just stayed on it for a day.
You went. Yeah. You get to see the lay of the land and understand the geology.
How interesting. Like instead of a river boat, it's a rice boat.
It's a rice boat.
There you go. Yeah. Amazing. I love it. And then you went on down to what?
And then we went. That's pretty much on the very tip of the country.
Uh-huh.
So then we drove down to the very tip of the country. Where those three seas meet that I mentioned earlier, and viewed some local architecture down there, Indian architecture,
mm-hmm.
and enjoyed a lot of the food down there, and that was really the end of our trip. And then we flew back to Delhi, spent one night, and then the following day we flew into Kathmandu.
Okay, now we pick up Tom. Now, you're going to have to get close. For some reason, that mic's not picking up as loud as it should, but I'll try to get this up here so we can hear you better. So, did you all meet up in Kathmandu, and that was about when? End of May? Was that it, Tom?
It's the 19th, wasn't it?
Yes.
19th of May. We're getting ready for the full moon, which I think is 10 days later or 7 days later.
Right, for
that.
The Sagadawa ceremony. So, yeah, I saw Doug, and it was... wonderful to see him, and we started regrouping and planning our trip to Lhasa, Tibet. Then from Lhasa, we took off to Mount Kailash.
And you were in Tibet, you flew into Tibet together from Kathmandu?
Yeah, we had a group of 25 of us that flew in. That was our group.
Where'd you stay in Kathmandu?
At the... That was the Menang.
Yeah, Menang Hotel.
And you stayed there before, I think.
Yeah,
in Temel.
Yeah.
Right in Temel.
And that's where basically all of the trekkers stay, and there's a lot of shopping there, and it's a wonderful place to be in Kathmandu.
Yeah. And that's where I got dysentery. And not that hotel, but in that. You got to be careful. You said you got it once. One time years ago you got dysentery, and then you haven't gotten it again. So I guess you got... Your system is adjusted to whatever little bug
that
runs around.
30 years ago.
30 years ago, and you haven't got sick. You didn't get sick at
all.
Sick
at all.
It's amazing. That's lucky, because it can be intense. But you had been in Kathmandu before.
A number of times.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good launching off place.
Yeah.
For China.
Yeah.
Or trekking in India or Tibet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree. You were there how long?
We were there 5 days, I believe. Before
5 days?
We...
Oh, you had a good amount of time there then, yeah.
Right.
Because you're waiting for certain people to fly in and catch up and everything.
Well, it's mainly getting our visas to Tibet from the Chinese embassy.
Oh.
It's not an easy thing these days.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's not only a visa, but you have to get the trekking permit. To go to Kailash, which is a totally different story.
And is that done at a separate department? Did you have to go to a separate building for permission to get the Kailash trekking permit?
Well, again, our guide took care of that, but that's when we had the dilemma with Lama Geltsen being interrogated at the last minute, and we finally got him approved and caught the plane and flew to Lhasa.
So on the morning of our departure, after 5 days, Tom and Lama Geltsen are at the Chinese embassy with our guide
Dorji
trying to get this wrapped up. I mean, meanwhile we're at the airport and we're going.
Oh, you were already at the airport.
Oh yeah. So this is like it's not easy to get all this clearance.
Mm-hmm. I think the plane was leaving at 11 o'clock and the embassy opened at 9.
Mm.
And
oh my gosh.
So there was all this drama, you know.
Yeah.
Which is typical. Something always happens.
2 hours is so close to two.
I know, and we actually made it. We caught
Well, we
plane.
Have all these meditators with us.
It's true.
Nobody gets rattled.
That's amazing. That's great. Yeah. So you take off on this kind of small plane to Tibet, to Lhasa? Wait.
Well,
it wasn't a small plane, but we took off, and then as we were approaching Lhasa, the weather conditions were bad, so we couldn't land.
Oh, dear. After all that. And the last thing you want to do is go back to Kathmandu, right?
So we ended up in China.
Oh, no.
In Chengdu.
We ended up in Chengdu. It's crazy.
So
and there's Lama Gelson, right? A Tibetan monk landing in China. Oh, boy.
So anyway, the next morning, we were able to make it to Lhasa, and we checked in.
You stayed
in
at the hotel?
The Yak Hotel.
The Yak Hotel. No, in China.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They put us up in a very nice hotel. Yeah.
Oh, good, good. And then you got back and you stayed there.
But Chengdu is actually a beautiful city.
Yes, it is.
So modern looking. And that's where all the pandas are from, you know.
Cindy and I have traveled to Chengdu in the past.
Uh-huh.
And it is a marvelous city.
It is, yeah.
You've been there?
Yeah, a long, long time ago. Oh, I did a Zen tour of China.
You wouldn't recognize it. No,
I'm sure
it's
I won't,
so
because that
looking.
Was years and years and years ago. That was 30-something years ago, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was very different then. And now I'm sure a lot more hotels and cars. The idea of cars in the cities. No, it wasn't like that when I was there at all. It was very different. So you land in Tibet and higher altitude. What's Lhasa at? That's 13?
About 12 something.
12,000, yeah.
But because we were delayed one day.
Oh, right.
We only had one opportunity to go to the Potala Palace, and that was right after we landed.
Uh-huh.
So you can imagine the altitude and 25 people walking up those steps.
It's a lot of steps, as I remember.
Yeah,
I can't, yeah.
Yeah, but we all made it. No one complained, but that's exactly what you're not supposed to do. Yeah.
We broke all the rules for altitude sickness.
Really? You're not supposed
we
to
did.
Do some exercise like that?
When you land at that elevation, they recommend you go to your hotel and rest, drink lots of water, and don't do anything for the rest of the day.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah, well, that's hard to do when you're traveling, right?
Well, at that altitude, you really need to pay attention to that because that'll you out of the game.
I had altitude sickness when I did the trip with Tom because we went on the back dirt roads up to like 16,000 feet.
Yeah. Oh.
And I just had gotten over dysentery and I thought I was going to die. I mean, I really thought I was, in fact, I wanted to die because the altitude sickness makes you want to die.
I know, it's bad.
Yeah, I mean, so... I've been a little nervous to go to Kailash after that experience with altitude sickness. So, yeah, I understand. But it was okay because once I got past, the sick bus downhill, I mean, that was actually as scary as not because we were going down a dirt road. And Tom says, get them down as quickly as possible to a lower altitude. And we literally were going like 50 or 60 miles down this narrow dirt road with rocks and everything was flying out of the bus and all the things in the overhead of the bus and people were throwing up and it was like the
they
worst.
They were on the sick bus.
Yeah, I was on
there
the sick bus.
There was a sick bus and a well bus.
I was on the sick bus and it was not.
I organized the sick bus to get down fast. You know?
And one of the worst parts is before we were going to get on the bus and this little Tibetan, I don't know, bed and breakfast, I guess, up at like 15,000, 14,000 feet, one of the buses wouldn't start, and there's two buses. So one bus is pulling the other bus around and around in a circle.
Trying to jump-start it.
Trying to get it going, and this cloud of dust is going up in the air higher and higher till the bus starts. And then we have to run and jump and get on the bus and then do this 50-mile-an-hour downhill.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was fun.
One of the... guys that was really sick was on the bus when they were trying to jump start it, and he was actually hallucinating. And I said, no, that really happened, along with his hallucinations.
I had the strangest experience, and I don't know, maybe it was an hallucination, because I really thought I was going to die in that room. And then I heard this sound of a woman chanting in Tibetan, and I looked out and I just saw a crow sitting on the wall, and then I saw snow and the Himalayas outside, and there was a full moon, and after that I got better. I wasn't sick anymore, but I still was on the sick bus. But anyway, so here you are, and you're now getting geared up, and you had not been to Kailash before, right, Doug?
That's right. First time to Kailash.
So this is exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not easy to get there.
No. How long did it take you to get there?
I think it took us like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, it's 3 days now. Well, the first time I went, it was 5 days, but half of it is now paved, the roads. So it speeds it up a bit, but it's still very, very rough and difficult.
It's
and we went on this one shortcut. You may want to talk about that a little bit.
Right. So we're on this bus. We're on a bus that carries 22 people. Every seat is full.
Uh-huh.
Right. So it's kind of like a half bus, like if one of these here on Maui. And the bus driver says, "I know a shortcut. You guys want to take a shortcut?" So, you know, of course, everybody says, yeah. And he just, like, makes a left turn off the road down in this huge valley, sand. Tibet is considered the roof of the world, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it really is. I mean, just as far as you can see, it's nothing but sand and mountains and features that look like poos, right? Just all over the place. And he just takes off right in the middle of this. And we can't even see where we're going. And he finally ends up on something like a road.
Right.
Yeah. And off we go, bumping for hours and hours and hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Then we get to this bridge that was half washed out. So they're out there putting rocks, trying to secure it. And we're all thinking, should we get off the bus?
I would have.
And we didn't. No. He just gunned it.
Yeah, no guardrails.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And where did it take you? Where'd you land up?
We ended up on another road on our way to Mount Kailash.
Yeah. We're on the way to Tengri. West at that point.
Oh, yes.
Tengri.
That was on the way to Everest Base Camp.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
We spent some time there, too.
Yeah, I've seen pictures. I think you were there in Tengri, right.
But that we spent the night at the Everest Base Camp, but the monastery there was so beautiful, and we went in for a private ceremony with Lama Gelson, and there were nuns and monks in there praying, and Lama asked for them to pray, give a blessing for our Kailash trip, which they did, and it was just absolutely beautiful.
And we didn't even mention Lama couldn't wear his robes in Tibet, but by now in Kailash he could wear his robes. He was able to.
No, he didn't wear his robes, but we couldn't even mention his name, Lama Gelson. Oh. So he was Tommy G.
With an aloha shirt.
Yeah, until we got out of Lhasa, then again we could call him Lama. But again, we were being watched very closely.
Yeah. By the way, there's going to be slides and pictures and stories about this happening on August 4th at the McCoy. And I'm so happy that you arranged to get the McCoy for this because it's so special. Plus, your film, Kailash, is so nice to see at the McCoy. And you've done a lot of films there, so you know how to get that all together.
Yeah, right? We'll be able to pull that off, hopefully. Lama will be talking about not only the slides, but some stories that accompany the slides. So it should be a really nice evening. And then after that, I'll screen my film, The Mount Kailash Return to Tibet. So
it starts at what time? 7 o'clock, I think?
7 p.m., yes.
And then your film, Kailash, kind of goes into, wasn't that when you actually brought the ashes of Lama Tenzin to the top of Kailash?
That's correct. We had a ceremony at the Kora at 18,600 feet and released his ashes and did a prayer and so forth.
That's high. 18,600 feet. I mean, that is amazing. So going up to that height at this point, is there any issues with altitude sickness? Because now you're getting higher.
We were in a tea house, and Doug was saying, "I don't know if I should go." You want to?
Yeah, right. So I got a bout of altitude sickness, and
it's hard.
And for me, it manifested in a lack of oxygen. I couldn't get a full breath.
Did you get the headache?
No, I didn't really have a headache, but I couldn't sleep at night. As soon as I would doze off at night for sleep, I would like immediately wake up.
Gasping for air.
Yeah, right? Gasping for air. So I had to like sit up in my bed. And there were several nights I didn't sleep at all. So I just would sit up and concentrate on my breathing and I would be okay. And that was at about maybe 15,000 feet. So I knew, you know, I needed to go up to 18,000 feet.
And you didn't get other side effects? Because altitude sickness can cause a lot of other things to happen.
No, that was really.
So and you didn't bring oxygen pillows and things?
We had oxygen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had a couple of doctors. We had one doctor that we just randomly ran into that gave us some pretty good counsel. And you apparently you really only want to take oxygen if you really are in bad shape. Mm-hmm. Once you start taking it, then it's your body adjusts to that, and then you lose your
okay.
So I had made the decision the night before, after not sleeping for several nights and not being able to breathe very well, that I probably shouldn't go up to Mount Kailash. Mm-hmm. And the following morning, I got caught up in the energy and some encouragement from my dear friends, one of which is sitting here, Tom. And
what's the pep talk like? Well, give us your pep talk.
Well, again, it was based on the doctor's report, too, because the oxygen in his blood was actually adequate. It hadn't dropped.
Right.
So with that in mind, I felt safe, you know, advising him to go, because literally you go up and then we drop back down. It's not like we would spend the night up there. And since he was feeling better, I just thought, why miss out on this, you know?
Yeah, you've gone this far, right. Yeah.
They measured my oxygen. It was 85, which is, like the doctor said, that's fine. That's not an issue.
Yeah, so 90-something, I think, is adequate.
Yeah, right.
Or normal, I should say.
Right.
And
so
at this point, do you have to walk? You're at the walking? You're
We're right outside of where we were staying, and we're all ready to just take off walking.
Well, we have
mountain.
2 minutes to get to the grand finale here. 2 minutes left to get to the top of the hill. So it takes how many days, or how long did it take you to get to the top of Kailash?
Well, it's 3 days, 33 miles, and again, we all of us made it. We were extremely happy, and it was much joy when we got to the end. And
there were no yak rides.
But if you really want to hear the story, you'll come to the benefit on August the 4th, 7 p.m. at the McCoy Theater.
We actually have one more minute, actually a minute and a half. So no one did a yak, had to do a yak ride? Because sometimes you can get yaks if you have to.
What's really fascinating, the yak basically carried all of our supplies, but now they're riding horses. About half of our group, believe it or not, rode the horses up to the Kora, to the 18,600
mm-hmm.
feet. But the horses can't go down because it's too steep. So, you know, then they had to walk the rest of the way, except for one of our travelers who needed to take the horse because she physically couldn't have made it.
Mm-hmm.
But we really lucked out getting the horses.
So in the minute or half or 2 minutes left, what did it feel like, Doug, making it to the top of Kailash? What was the experience like?
Well, it's almost indescribable because the mountain itself is described as a diamond, and it's actually shaped like a diamond, and it's covered with snow, and you have a view of it all the way up, and the weather was fabulous. There was hardly any clouds that day. We were up there, and of course when you hit the summit, it's full of Tibetan prayer flags all over, and then the walk down is this massive open valley where you've got these great views. So yeah, it's just really a sight to see. And you know, it's a spiritual journey for many, many people.
Oh yeah.
So you also have the added benefit of that.
Don't they say, Tom, that's one of the things that for Buddhists to, you know, one of the great goals in life is to get to Kailash and experience that?
Right, and also for the Hindus.
And Lama, you know, of course, having to be able to do that was what a gift, too.
Right, right. He was just glowing on that trip. And it was so much fun and a lot of energy coming from that man. You know, it was just wonderful to watch him.
So come join and experience the energy at the McCoy Theater August 4th. It's a benefit for the Maui Dharma Center. Tickets are at 242 Show, the Mac. And you'll be there, Tom. You can see the great movie. You can see Doug and all the people there. It'll be almost like being there on the journey. And Kathy DeCushy can help you arrange your next trip to Mount Kailash, or wherever you may want to go. You can call her at 244-1414, and really, it's always a good idea to do, isn't it? Make a travel agent help you. Aloha!